Hello and welcome to the Brady Bros Boston Sports Podcast, where we cover everything in the Boston sports world. My name is James Brady, and alongside me is my brother Nicholas. Say hello.
Hello, everybody. Today is Monday, September 28th, and we are going to get going here with episode 63. Let's go.
No icing for the first time in 39 years. The Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
And not starting it off as we always do, because we have a special guest today. Nicholas, would you like to introduce who we're with?
And coming back from the bracket episodes where he had a couple of controversial takes, Ed Stoll, nice to have you back on the podcast.
Yeah, it's good to be back on it. I missed being here. The bracket was a lot of fun, I'm not going to lie. Still a little upset with how it turned out, but here we are.
That's all right. It was only 5 months ago. All right. And now we will get into the Red Sox. James, you can lead us off here with our first bit of news that broke last night, yesterday.
I think it was basically right as the game started. So Ron Renneke, you know, managed that game knowing that was the last time he was going to manage the Red Sox. Not surprising. I think just the season that they had, he was kind of just an interim guy to begin with. And I don't think it's anyone's surprise that he's out this year after they finished the season. Finally, thank God it's over. 24-36, better than I actually thought we did, at a 400 win percentage, but we still managed to somehow do better than the Pirates, the Rangers, and the Tigers. What'd you guys just both think about the season? Nicholas, we'll start off with you.
It became pretty clear right away with a couple of the opt-outs and, you know, Sale, once the season was announced what was going to happen, Sale determining surgery with the whole COVID delay. And then we had Erod opting out as well with complications. And it was pretty clear right away that it was not going to be a great season. You know, there was still some hope that maybe come September, we'd be able to turn it around a little bit. But very disappointed, I'm going to be honest. I stopped watching. It was just rough. And, you know, but I think Renneke kind of got dealt a pretty bad hand. It was a very weird year to start managing a new team. And I think we can kind of just, this will be an easy year to overlook and just kind of move on to the next one.
Yeah. And Ed, what about you?
Well, thank God it's over. my expectations weren't high at the start of the season, but like, wow, that was bad. Even when it started, like after all the everything that happened with our rotation between Sale and Rodriguez, I was like, okay, we don't have pitching, but our lineup was still pretty similar. And I was like, okay, I think with just this offense, we can get to 500. Maybe with the expanded playoffs sneak in. I did not see us finishing last place in the East, I gotta be honest. To be honest, I think it comes down to something Eckersley and Jerry Remy were talking about in the first game. I think they jinxed us. They were talking about how bad the Orioles were when we blew them out the first game. And then here we are with a worse record than them. But moving on from Renneke, again, I don't think it's a surprise. I know a lot of people throughout the season were calling for his head pretty much, but it really wasn't his fault. This was a terrible, terrible hand he was dealt. And I think even if Cora was back, I think this season would have been pretty similar with how it turned out. Yeah, he made some questionable decisions here and there, especially with his lineups and some questionable pitching choices. But also with the pitchers we had, I don't think it really mattered who was on the mound. Though I do have some hope for next season, I'd say, especially with the offense, again, not even being terrible this season. Obviously our pitching atrocious and needs to be addressed very soon. But with this offense and fielding too, outside of pitching, I feel pretty confident about next season.
Yeah, I don't think it's a year where we quite have to tear everything down. I found another interesting thing that none of us really mentioned at first was the fact that we talked about, you know, the pitching rotation with Sale and E-Rod and the opt-outs and the abbreviated season due to COVID. And none of us even brought up the fact that Mookie Betts and David Price were also gone. We're already so far removed from that that it's just kind of another huge thing that happened that I found it kind of funny that none of us brought it up the first time around. And I mean, myself included, but just another thing to kind of keep in mind. But I personally don't think it's totally a tear down, although depending on what kind of happens with a couple of contracts, maybe it will be. But yeah, Renicky definitely kind of got dealt a very, very bad hand. And I don't think he was a guy who was put in there for longevity. So I don't think it's like the end of the world that he's going to be gone at the end of this year. But I will move on. And Nicholas, you have a question for us written down here that you know the answer to. We don't, but
yeah. So I did a deep dive because I just wanted to know. Obviously, this probably kind of has an asterisk next to it with the shortened season and everything. But you mentioned earlier the Red Sox finishing with a .400 win percentage. I don't know how they would statistically say that. But do either of you have or both of you, I'm going to make guess the last year we had a worse win percentage than this as a franchise. And we kind of touched on this briefly before we started recording. It's not as far back as you guys were scheming.
I think I know.
Okay. Then Ed, feel free to lead it off.
2012, because Bobby Valentine was terrible as manager.
Okay. And James?
That was going to be my guess. And
well, I'll give you a hint. It's wrong.
It's wrong. Interesting. So we won it in 13, maybe 2015.
Wait.
I feel like I jinxed you guys by.
Yeah, I feel like you threw us on it. Like, you kind of threw us off by saying it was not as far back as we thought.
I'm gonna be honest. With the way you were talking before was closer than the way you're talking now. Oh. It was 1965.
Well then, it's been a while. I mean, that kind of makes sense though, because you have to stretch being that bad over 102. More games.
Oh, so that makes. I was gonna say
we finished 62-100 that year.
Okay,
that's bad.
Hey, we turned it around, and was that 67? We went back to the World Series.
It was. We then lost in three games.
Yeah, the dream season.
I just thought it was kind of like an interesting little fact. Obviously, again, an asterisk next to it, kind of with the shortened season. But maybe now let's get into kind of some contracts that are due up and. This will probably be much of what we talk about over the next month or so as we go through the playoffs and get into free agency. And once again, James, you've kind of structured this, so I'll let you kind of moderate here.
Yeah, so I think two of the biggest, and you guys can feel free, this is not even doing research, just literally looking at social media. And if you want to throw in any extras, feel free to just, you know, throw them in there. But I think the two biggest contracts we're going to look at this offseason are Jackie Bradley Jr., who, you know, might be leaving because I believe his contract is completely up. And then JD Martinez has the option to opt out of his contract also after the end of this season, which I think is officially like the first couple days after the end of the World Series, something like that. So I just want to hear from you guys, thoughts and opinions, what you think both of these guys will end up doing. And like I said, if there's anyone else I missed, feel free to throw it in there. And Ed, we'll start off with you this time.
Well, first off, I think Martinez is definitely going to stay. I don't know where I heard, I definitely saw that somewhere where it was like inside sources were saying most likely he will, that he won't opt out. I don't really see a reason why he would almost. I mean, obviously if he wants to win, but he's obviously likes it here. He chose to sign here. He's still making a lot of money. He's been playing well here. He plays well at Fenway, batting wise. So I don't really see why he would. JBJ, on the other hand, I'm a little a mix because I prefer him to stay because I still miss that outfield of him, Betts, and Benintendi. And I love him as a player. But I could see him chasing somewhere else in free agency that'll pay him more. Because I don't know if Bloom will pay him a lot especially for his defensive talents, which obviously everybody knows is he's amazing. But his bat at the plate, especially, I think will hamper his free agency and how much money we're going to be offering him.
Yeah, I think you raised some really good points about his offensive capabilities, although I'd argue they have been pretty good at times, or very good at times.
Oh, I was going to say, when he's hot, he's hot. But when he's cold, he is...
Is it what, ALCS yeah. in 2018?
Won the yeah, and that's another thing I wanted to bring up. Oh. We mentioned, you know, the contracts and JD having the player. Is it a player or a team option? Player option?
I think it's player option, yeah.
Player option.
Yeah, this is almost an exact team that went to and won the World Series not 2 years ago. You know, obviously last year, not exactly what everyone expected, or for that matter, hoped. But we only missed the playoffs last year by a handful of games, if I remember, maybe a half dozen. Am I wrong in saying that?
Yeah, I think it was one of those was it more than that? I don't think we were out until like the last.
We weren't out until the last month. I know that for a fact.
I just remember it wasn't likely.
Yeah, it wasn't super close. It was basically we needed a string of like insane.
We had to like. I remember we had to win out pretty far.
I think we had to win out like 7 or 8, and then have the Rays and or Yankees lose.
I think it was Tampa.
Most of them.
My point being, like, if you're going to look back on this season and base what you want to do with this team on just this season alone, I don't think that's a fair expectation. So I really do hope both of these guys come back. Both guys that I envision on like a Red Sox team that could continue to win very handily for the next couple of years. But if one of them leaving does open up room for, say, some pitching, I think the trade-off there is doable. Jackie Bradley for sure. And, you know, JD adds a ton to the plate. James, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this because you, I think, were leaning towards JD might leave with the National League moving towards the designated hitter and him having, you know, basically the other half of the league as an option if he doesn't want to play in the field.
Yeah, I think if I had to choose one that's staying and leaving, it's definitely, I feel like JD is more likely to stay than Jackie Bradley, but at the same time, I think, yeah, the NL being kind of an open field for DHs now is a huge opportunity. But at the same time, I think you can still make a lot of money with this Red Sox team. I think it's the first of maybe two opt-outs he has, or he might have already signed through his first opt-out. I'm not exactly sure. So, if Nicholas, you might be able to check on that. But I think he could probably end up staying. He's very good, like Ed said. I really enjoy watching him. He's a huge bat when he really can get it going. And then when it comes to Jackie Bradley Jr., I feel like he's leaving, which really pains me because he's basically just a walking highlight in center field, and there's going to be a huge void to fill. And even if you can get a middle-of-the-road defender kind of out there, maybe someone who brings a little bit more at the plate, I just think you're going to miss those highlight catches. You're not going to find a guy who can make those grabs up against the wall, those diving catches like he can. And another huge thing for me was he had a quote, I think it was last night or the night before, in one of his final interviews before the last game, where he said to Garen Austin, just thank you for everything, Garen. So the thank you for everything just seems like it has a bit of finality to it. Because that was kind of what Mookie Betts did also at the end of the 2019 season. He was kind of a thank you for everything, Boston. So it kind of plants that seed of doubt in my mind with him coming back. And he is, you know, a decently sized contract for, I mean, a huge defensive presence. But when people are going to be looking at what he does at the plate, I think he's going to fall a little bit short. So I don't have full confidence in him coming back, to be completely honest. I hope he does. But like you said, Nicholas, if maybe that's in lieu of getting some better pitching, you know, you bring back Sale, who's an ace. You bring back Erod, who gave us 19, probably should have been 20 plus wins last season. You bring back some really great arms, and like I said before, I don't think this is a team where you completely have to tear it down. You have some great arms coming in, you know, Tanner Houck, you have a great bat, and Bobby Dalbec we might see next season. So I think the Red Sox have a chance to not suck like they did this year for the next couple of years.
Yep. So just to clarify, Jackie Bradley right now is on a 1 year, $11 million contract, and he is due for free agency in 2021. So he must have already exercised that option if he had it. But you brought up another good point that I want to touch on, kind of obviously with the weird year. We got to see many different looks. So kind of like an exploratory approach in my mind, that we just got to see so many different players, which I think could help us make some pretty big decisions down the line.
Yeah, and moving on to the last kind of thing, which we might have alluded to a little bit in the beginning part, but just real short and quick, do you guys see Cora with a chance to make a return in 2021 for the Red Sox? Nicholas, we'll start off with you.
I mean, I guess there's always a chance, but I don't think it's the direction the Red Sox will go. It's kind of one of those things that despite the allegations or not being true about the Red Sox and everything, there still were allegations that tends to cloud people's judgment of other people. Unfortunately, I think we see that a lot nowadays. But a chance, yes. The most likely candidate, I don't think so.
Ed?
I'm all in on bringing him back. I gotta be real. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if it was the plan the whole time. They just throw in Renecki, pretty much throw him to the fire and be like, yep, this is a one-year rental.
Just tap him in for 1 year.
Like, I'm all in for it. Yeah, the allegations and everything, but like, he is a smart, he has a high baseball IQ. After going to a lot of games and watching him manage that 2018 season, especially seeing him develop as a manager, there was a lot of like little things that would play out in the games that would end up leading to wins. Obviously, we won the World Series with him in his first year as managing. Like, he is a brilliant guy when it comes to that. And
comes back for the next year and wins it again.
I wouldn't be
like
surprised.
He just takes a year off.
Yeah, I think it's a balance between just like the PR of the move and like the actual, like, what's smart move to make.
I think it'll be, if they do bring him back, it'll be a relatively quiet signing, almost like, yeah, he never left.
Yeah, I think I saw something on Twitter the other day. It's basically like, if you think about it, Chaim Bloom came in thinking he was getting Cora. So he probably won't be as opposed to the idea as someone who's like, oh, I want to bring in my own guy, this and that. I think Cora's got a great chance. It's just, it just comes down to the Red Sox need to take a risk to take some heat from, you know, kind of the press, maybe the media, that kind of stuff. But I think he's a guy that the players love. He's a young coach. You see that trend in basically every sport, a lot of younger coaches and guys who just, they're, you know, fresh out of the game. They know what's going on. They know how to interact with these guys. And I just think there's a very, very good chance of him coming back. Whether or not that actually happens, I think it's kind of down to, you know, how much the Red Sox are willing to take you know, a bit of heat from everyone, what they're going to have to say about it. But I don't think it'll be that bad.
I really got to be honest.
I feel like if we can just get the Astros and just kind of be like, hey, maybe if they bring their manager back, we have to bring Cora back, right?
Oh, yeah. And I don't think there's a question. Don't forget what the Astros did. I'm going to say it for years to come. So counterpoint to the Cora argument. Jason Veritek, how do we feel about that?
Commenting on something. Yeah, that's super valid.
I saw like one headline like suggesting could he be, or like speculation for a new manager, and I feel like his name was in the I don't know if that's realistic.
I'm mixed because I think he would be a great manager if all the talent is there. because I can see him being a guy that guys will rally behind, and him being a great leader. But what Cora has is he knows how to put guys in spots where they can succeed. And something you really saw that in is pinch hitting. Like, you look at like Chris Young, I think in 2016? Yeah. When pinch hitting was great. Or was that 2015? I can't remember, before Cora, after Cora. I'm pretty sure that was with Cora. Or Eduardo Nunez throughout the 2018 campaign, Cora managed him, I thought, really well in terms of putting him in the game when he needed to be there. You look at game one of the World Series. I was there when
three-run homer off the pinch hit.
That home run, and I remember saying, why are they pinch hitting Nunez right now? And then he went and did that, and I was like,
That's why.
Cora, I'll never doubt your decisions again. I can't remember if Chris Young was with Cora or not. Now I'm like totally blanking on that.
I just can remember double check.
He batted like 400 while pinch hitting one season or something stupid. Like every time he came in the eighth, he would like get on base.
Yeah. Anyways, Nicholas, if you want to check up on that real quick. But anyways, we'll kind of start to move into the Celtics, which is, this is going to be just the first half of this entire episode.
Gonna cut you off. He was on the Red Sox 2016 and 2017.
Okay, 2016. I think 2016, yeah, because he did Okay, so yeah, he was right.
There's even a stat for pinch hitting percentage that's like.
I just remember him like every time he.
Oh,
came
if there's a stat, it's out there.
That was
don't
definitely
worry.
Before. Yeah, that was before Cora, because Cora, but Cora still did that really well. But I just remember that season, like anytime he would come into pinch hit, it'd be like, all right, yeah, he's going to get on probably.
Yeah, it's one of those things where as a manager, like making those calls is huge in a baseball game. And I think Cora is.
It's one of those things like you either look very smart or you look like a complete idiot. And I think Cora just tended to look smarter a good majority of the
especially
time.
Especially when lined up with John Farrell before, with him coming in. Because Farrell didn't really know how to manage the bullpen at all. And even though we didn't have the best bullpen in the league, we still don't, obviously. I thought Cora really got the best out of it in 2018. But yeah.
All right. We'll put that to bed. We'll move on to a bunch more complaining because we're talking about the Boston Celtics who, they lost last night in game six to the Heat. Heat take the series, moving on to the NBA finals. That's all I'm going to say. I'm just going to open it up. You guys just kind of initial reactions and try to keep it relatively brief because I know we're going to spend a ton of time on this. But like kind of initial reaction, then we'll run through a bunch of questions too. So, Ed, if you just want to just let it all out.
I got to be honest. This is a very frustrating loss. almost as bad as last year. When we lost like 2 years ago in the Eastern Conference Finals, like that wasn't bad. Like it was like this team is something.
I was also gonna say because two years ago wasn't that Kyrie?
It was no Kyrie. Gordon Hayward
goes out, and then Kyrie goes out, and then suddenly we're in the Eastern Conference Finals
in Game Seven against the Milwaukee Bucks.
No, against LeBron. LeBron's Cavs.
Oh, it was the Cavs. Oh,
yeah. Last year just got dumpstered by the Bucks. No. But anyways.
But then, like, everything with Kyrie, and it was like, all right, this team isn't working out. Kyrie is not working out. And then this year we get Kemba, and all the talent was there. Like, everything was there. Even the chemistry was there. Like, it really just came down to, like, effort and dumb decision-making. On Brad Stevens and the players' fault, like, both sides. But really, I thought it just came down to, like, effort. Like the Heat looked like they wanted to win, like outside of like the stats and everything, like you watch them play, the Heat looked like they want to win. The Celtics did not. Like, I think it was, yeah, game four, they came out so flat. Like I was like, this is it. Or was that game four? Yeah,
it was. Do you want to hear, do you want to hear a fun stat? I believe it was game four here.
No, game five. My bad. Game four. We lost by like 10, right?
Yeah,
we won game five.
Yeah, in game four, the Celtics' biggest lead was two, and they led for something like three or 4 minutes throughout the entire game.
I think it was game five when we came out so flat in the first quarter, and I was like, that was it. But, and then, you know, like, last night was just, oh. There was, like, a brief period. Like, the whole game when we were, like, kind of in there, I was like, okay, this isn't terrible. And then there was a, like, in the third quarter was like, this looks like the Celtics again. Like, this looks like a winning team. And then, like, the last 8 minutes was just, like, terrible basketball. And it just looked like they were like, yep, we want to go home now. Like, we don't want to be here. Just, like, anytime I felt like we got the ball, we would just chuck up a three. There was no driving. No scoring in the paint, nothing. It was just throw up a three wherever you are. And again, the Heat were just beating us on scoring in the paint. They weren't even knocking down that many three-pointers. I mean, Jay Crowder has been horrendous from three.
But yeah, Nicholas, we'll send it over to you for a minute because I also have a couple of things to say. And we could talk for literally an hour plus about this, but I don't want to do that. So we'll try to keep it relatively quick. But Nicholas, your initial thoughts?
Yeah, so my initial thoughts were last night, obviously, right after the game. I was pretty hot and heavy. I'm going to be honest, I was coming up with some takes in my head that probably wouldn't sound great right now. So I'm going to forego saying them. But I think, Ed, you brought up a great point about the effort and how the Heat looked like they wanted to win. I do think in, like, it's very obvious, like, the Heat obviously won this series, but I do think in sports, there's a very clear definition of if a team loses a series versus a team winning a series or a game or something like that. And I think this was an instance where the Heat won this series. I don't think the Celtics lost this series. I think the Heat won. At times, yes, we didn't look like we looked like we were thrown away, but the Heat played some incredible basketball. And there are a couple things I want to touch quickly on for the Celtics. But yeah, credit to the Heat for playing a very hard series and, I mean, beating us. At times, we looked like the Celtics we know and love. You mentioned that third quarter, mid to late third quarter last night, where it seemed like, okay, there's no way this doesn't go to seven games. We're looking great. I think they had a lead of about 8 or 10 at one point. And it was due to the defense. And I think that's kind of, you know, the Celtics are known as one of, if not the best defensive teams in the league, playing that seven game series with Toronto, another great defensive team, showing that we were able to come out on top in a very defensive series. And then I think this one where it switched back to kind of, you have to generate some offense, I think it was really tough. You mentioned the chucking up threes. In games that we lost, we attempted 7 more threes per game and about 4 or 5 less just regular field goals. So in those games that we won, we were just way more efficient from the field and from three. And a couple just quick things I want to touch on. You talked about Brad Stevens and some decision makings. Brad Stevens, a guy who has let it be known and is known for a while that if another team is going on the fast break, he doesn't necessarily take that timeout that a lot of other teams would. He lets his team figure out on the court. And while I think there's a lot of merit to doing that, I think there are a few instances in the series, and especially last night, where a timeout could have gone a long way to slow a roll, to, you know, drop a defensive plan, drop an offensive play, do something just to interrupt that flow that the Heat seemed to grab toward the end of the game there. Coming down the stretch, the Celtics, every game we lost was by 5 points or less up to last night. And every game we won was 10 or 12 or 15 points even. So our inability to kind of close games down the stretch. And again, I think it came down to offense, yes, but again, defense. Like, we are known for being a defensive team. We need to get the stops when we need them, and we clearly didn't. And then lastly, we talked about the three ball. It just seemed like, you know, if we're having a hard time scoring, that's where the guys go to. And I think this is kind of, we've talked about this many times, it's kind of a league that's turning toward the three ball. But the Celtics shot pretty well from the field, not from 3-point, averaging in these series, just pulling it up here, 46% from the field, which I would argue is very good. I don't know what the other teams tend to shoot, but I think anytime you are getting close to that 50% mark, that's pretty good in the game of basketball. So I think, not forcing that three down the stretches and combining that with the defense from the Celtics would have gone a long way. That was a lot for me, James. I'll let you get your thoughts in here.
Yeah, I'll try to keep it quick because you guys have said almost everything I've wanted to say. It's frustrating because we've been in this position before, and you said it perfectly, Nicholas. The Celtics just couldn't close out games. And I will tell you, the second I knew that this series was over last night was when the Celtics were up by, I believe it was 6 points. I believe it was 96-90 with about 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter. The second they went up by that much, I said, this is it. They're going to lose. I knew they were going to lose because they had been in that position the three games that they had lost in that series. They got up. They got too comfortable with a couple-point margin. The Heat are a very good offensive team. They can cut that down from, you know, Tyler Herro, who's, let's see, my age or maybe a tiny bit older. He's younger than you, Nicholas.
Oh yeah,
like, this kid is the first kid from born in the year 2000 to play in, I believe, a conference finals.
And now an NBA
finals, and it was so calm, cool, and collected, and boom, chops the lead down to nothing. And the Celtics, they're a team that I've said before, it's a lack of experience, and I don't even know if it's a lack of experience anymore, which I guess it could be, because we've only been in this position a couple of times, and I don't want to do this, but you look at Jordan, it took him many times to get to his first finals, you know, 3 or 4 years before he finally was successful with a couple of close series. I think it was like the Pistons that kept beating them, but I think we're similar in the fact that, like, once we break that barrier to the finals, I think this team has a really great chance. But you think about, oh, but you have such talented players with some experience. And you talk about Kemba Walker. I don't think Kemba Walker had ever been to a conference finals before.
Yeah, I don't even think he'd made it past the first round.
Exactly. So you look at, he's a guy who before at this,
here, I think he only had 2 playoff wins.
At this stage, and you know, even in his career, he's never been there. You got guys like Tatum and Brown who are still very young and developing. And as much as they are all stars, I think that it's just going to take more of getting used to this. And you don't have to panic. I think the Celtics go into panic mode in that last 8-minute stretch, and it's a sense of urgency that doesn't need to be there. It's where they're focused on, like you said, Ed, just chalking up these threes that never seem to fall for them. But you don't have to eliminate a 6-point lead 3 points at a time. You can do it, you know, play your defensive game that the Celtics are so good at, and, you know, work at chopping that lead 1-2 points at a time. You really don't need to get all back at once, which was something I think the Celtics really struggled with this series. But we'll kind of turn it, because we've talked about kind of forcing the three ball. I just think we'll kind of do a couple of forward questions here. What do you think we need to change going down the stretch so we're winning, you know, these conference finals series, you know, hopefully in the future? And, you know, what's the barrier that's standing between us, whether it be player, whether it be skill, coaching, whatever, you know, what do we need to change to move into the finals and win an NBA championship? Nicholas, you can start it off for us.
This is something I've thought about for a while. I don't know that we've really brought it up. I think we need that, not a superstar, not an all-star even. We need a dynamic big man who can score down low, so that when we get into these situations, we have an option to go to that isn't just chalking it up from outside the arc, or, you know, trying to drive on very good defensive teams. I think it comes down to, we don't really have an quote unquote easy way to score. You can't feed it to that guy underneath who can just get it for an easy layup. Granted, Tice played an incredible playoffs, an incredible series, in my opinion, for kind of being someone who you really absolutely would not mention as one of the premier big men in this league. He played very well. I just think we need someone who is a bit more consistent and maybe can offer a little bit more in the defense area as well.
All right, yeah, and then over to Ed as well.
Yeah, no, we need a legit big man. Tice and Cantor have been, I've liked what I've seen from them, but we need, as Nick was talking about, a legit big man. I also thought some of our younger guys should have gotten a little more, some more minutes, especially in the topic of a big man. I think Robert Williams could have gotten some more minutes. I liked what I saw him.
He played in 3 of the games and averaged 9 minutes.
Yeah, I think I liked what I saw from him. Grant Williams, another one of the young guys, also had showed out a lot.
He appeared in all 6 games and averaged 8 minutes.
Yeah. I thought some of the younger guys should have played maybe a little bit more. But really, I think our biggest piece that we need right now is a big.
Yeah, and going back to quickly what you said about Grant Williams, I believe the stat from last night, and this is me remembering it from the broadcast, so I could be off by a little bit, but the Celtics were something like, I think, plus 14-ish when he was on the court.
I heard plus 12, I think, at one point, so that's correct.
Granted, heading into the like 9-minute mark where it all just, the wheels fell off for the Celtics, but another guy where, you know, he obviously had a very positive presence on the court, and it's, I think, when we're running a very young lineup with a lot of the guys we have, if we can make them play, you know, 40-ish minutes of a game, I don't even know how many minutes they're averaging now, but, you know, dig deep within yourself and find the last couple of minutes to really, really fight it out instead of kind of bringing in some of our less dynamic guys. But anyways, Nikos, we'll bounce it over to you too after this.
Oh, go ahead, Ed.
Some of our younger guys, I just think they can provide a lot more off the bench. Because again, that was also something we didn't have a lot of. There was not a lot of bench support. And I think that like Grant Williams, Romeo Langford, those guys, once they get more minutes and really develop as players, Carson Edwards is another guy I liked. I think they can provide some serious depth off the bench. To really help out in replacing, say, Kemba. He really struggled kind of this series. Well, I don't want to say really struggled, but
it came in waves. He was good one game, he wasn't good the next.
Yeah. And when he's not good those games, because he, again, lack of experience, really, it seems weird talking about a veteran like that, but it's true. He hasn't made it this far ever in the playoffs. Having someone you can go to with confidence on your bench when the shots aren't falling for one of your starters, I think would be really, really help out the Celtics. Like having a Terry Rozier probably would have been helpful. Against
having an Isaiah Thomas, maybe. May I throw it out there?
Hey, he's got signed, right?
He's not on a team.
Well, we might have to talk to Brad about that one.
I really thought we should have signed him. But
I think you bring up a great point with the young guys. I don't know. Clearly, Eastern Conference Finals, maybe not the time to test out your rookies in that sense. And again, with the weird pause and then going into the bubble, only allowed so many people. Like, who do you bring, that type of thing? Tough to get those guys in for minutes. Going back to the minutes thing, James, Tatum and Brown were the only two Celtics to average 40 minutes per game the entire series. So working those two, and maybe we can kind of start to shift this towards that discussion of them. I was very disappointed last night in the way that Tatum played and handled himself down the stretch, just chalking up the threes. I think I want to preface this with saying, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown better stay on this team forever because they are going to be absolute superstars. Whatever they want to be paid, I know we're
going
just,
to be. They are already. And they're just going
exactly,
to get better.
But I mean, we're talking world class Hall of Fame. I'm going to knock on some wood somewhere because I'm really jinxing these guys. But that being said, I know we just paid Jaylen Brown, I think last year, that big
four years,
like 80 something million. Jason Tatum is due up next year, I believe, on a player option, deserves to be paid everything. That being said, the way he kind of handled himself down the stretch last night, Tatum, I think he was almost in a way trying too hard to carry the team. I think he really thought he wanted to take this game into his own hands. And I don't know that he has, again, that experience yet to do that. Yes, there have been games where he's absolutely done that. I mean, you look at the game, I forget which game it was, but he had like 2 points in the first half and then 30 something in the second half. I think it was a game five, maybe the one we won.
I also think he had a lot in like the third quarter of that game as well, where he put up like 15 or 17 or something, where he really just down search. And also just to clarify, on the Jaylen Brown contract is 4 years, 115 million.
150. Why did I say 80?
115, not 50.
15. Okay. So I was only 30 mil off. But yeah, I think he tried a little too hard, in my opinion, to take control of the game and like handle it by himself. Again, this is coming off pretty hot, being less than a day from the loss. So this, I might have to retract this statement in a future episode. But these two guys are, and let's not forget Marcus Smart, of course. Find me a player in the NBA who plays harder than that man. These two and three guys are going to be the poster of this franchise for, I hope, 10, 12 years to come.
Yeah. And going to like what you were saying about Tatum taking the game or wanting to take the game into his own hands and like carry the Celtics, I think having a deeper bench, again, would kind of alleviate him from feeling like forcing himself to do that.
Oh, absolutely.
Hot take. I think the Celtics would have won this series if they had Terry Rozier or maybe Isaiah Thomas would be Isaiah Thomas is kind of a stretch. I hate to say it. I love him as well. But like, see, like, or somebody like that, because like you think back to like Terry Rozier and having this guy that can come off the bench and just light the place up.
And also just hit big shots down the stretch too.
Exactly.
You don't get called Scary Terry doing nothing.
I think we kind of saw this with
strong six man.
I think we kind of saw this with Hayward came back in game three, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we won that game, obviously. And I think not that he was like that guy that's going to come off and hit those big, big shots and come off the bench, because I think Gordon Hayward is a starter on this team. But something another friend of mine and I talked about, just when he comes in the game, it's just someone else that he'd have to focus on to cover. Someone else the other team has to think about that could potentially take that big shot. So I think you're right. Having even just a smaller name than a Gordon Hayward or something like that, like a Terry Rozier, to come off the bench and just get, even just get in the heads of the opponents, I think would go a long way in alleviating some of the pressure that our top two or three guys felt.
Just to have that threat. Cause like Grant Williams, I don't think kind of brings that aura with him at this stage.
I think he brings the defensive mindset, but not like, necessarily. Again,
like scary Terry though, when he came in, you knew something could happen. Something big. He can make something big happen. He could go off and like rattle, go 5 for 5 from the three as soon as he gets in. There's something crazy and change the outcome.
You don't get your own t-shirt on the streets of Boston without doing something big.
Exactly. I think he would have been huge this series because Kemba was kind of hit or miss. And just to have someone that could come in for Kemba and light the place up like that, and I think could be huge. Someone just that can come off the bench and play. I don't think we need like another starter. Again, why I think Terry Rozier would have been kind of a good fit this season. Cause he obviously, I don't think is quite all-star starter caliber as we've seen with the Hornets this year. But just having someone that can come off the bench and really light the place up would have been really helpful.
Yeah. And I think you bring up a good point with that. And another guy you brought up was Kemba Walker, and being kind of like the guard on this team, you see him, you know, bring the ball up the court a lot. And he was another guy down the stretch too, where you just saw him lobbing threes, just whenever, cause he would be the guy, you know, carrying the ball across the court and then just boom over the half. Why not a 3-pointer? Not quite that exaggerated, but I'm going to skip the last thing we have here, cause that's something that kind of won't go out of date for a little bit. We've talked a lot about the Celtics.
Yep, we can talk about contracts in the future.
Yeah, we'll take a quick second here to take a break for a word from our sponsor. And we will basically just skip the Bruins because nothing's happened and we've already talked for a lot. So we'll just talk about the Patriots because, you know what? We have one good team and we're hoping it's them. But we'll start off. I'll just keep it quick. The Patriots grabbed a solid win against the Las Vegas Raiders, 36-20. Moving to 2-1 on the season, and I will just kind of let you guys, we'll do kind of an initial, once again, thoughts and opinions on it, and then we can get it going. But Ed, we'll start off with you.
Bill Belichick is amazing. That's all I have to say. Honestly, just the fact that he has shown already this team can do anything. Week one, we're running a ground and pound offense. Cam Newton rushing like crazy. Week two, we're throwing the ball hard. Not as much as some people I know wanted Cam to throw more. But we're out here. Julian Edelman, 179 receiving yards, most in his career. And then this week, the run game, just like out of nowhere. Rex Burkhead with a 3-touchdown game, looking like Alvin Kamara or CJ McCaffrey on the field, just making these insane dives and flips into the end zone. And showing a lot of really, like, he looked, usually Rex Burkhead kind of just is a back that just drives through the pile. He was making some serious cuts and like looking seriously athletic out there. And just really showing that Bill Belichick will do a new thing every week just to beat you. He will draw up a new game plan, whatever it is, whether it's running the ball, whether it's throwing the ball, whether it's beating you with special teams, he will do it just to beat you. He will find your defense or offense's weakness and just exploit it the entire game, as we saw yesterday with running the ball.
Yeah, Nicholas, over to you.
Yeah, and this is something that, James, you and I brought up on, I guess it was Saturday when we recorded the second Pats preview. It just seems like every week New England has a different way to beat you. And sure enough, this week again, they did it with Rex Burkhead. And who is J.J. Taylor, like the running back that was in there for quite a few?
Undrafted free agent number 40-something.
runs.
But yeah,
it just it doesn't matter. The creativeness and just the thought that goes into every single week and the planning and how good a coach Bill Belichick is, I think cannot be under like overstated rather. I was gonna say understated, that's incorrect use. But this was kind of a weird game for a little bit through the first couple quarters. You know, I'm feeling like, okay, like, yeah, we're winning, but this isn't looking great. Like we kind of need to do something more. And then you hit that second half, guys kind of exploded for a couple more touchdowns. And you're like, okay, this is more like it. This is a very handy win. I feel good about this now.
Yeah. So I was going to say, you brought up a great point, Nicholas, with the, you know, Belichick finds a different way to beat you, and Ed, you kind of touched on that too, with just running the ball. And I know we talked about on Saturday, the Saturday episode, kind of having a more balanced approach where you see some through the air, some through the run. Wasn't quite the balance we were looking for, but it was the jump start of the running game again. We saw him do next to nothing on the ground against Seattle, and then we put up 250 yards on the ground with seven different rushers. And you talk about finding, you know, who's the next guy up for this team, and it seems like it's someone different every week. Rex Burkhead, three touchdowns, 98 yards, I believe.
Sexy Rexy.
You know, two on the ground, one in the air, flying into the end zone, like Ed said. For God's sakes, we had a guy named Isaiah Zuber run the ball. I didn't know he was on a roster. I don't know who that guy is. I've never heard of him. But Bill Belichick will find a guy who literally works at a Walmart checkout, and he'll put up 150 yards against you. It doesn't matter. Kind of a bad example because Isaiah Zuber had one carry, but for 13 yards on a random end around that no one saw coming.
It's kind Belichick, of like a thing, like if you drop the right play and it's in your offensive line, it shows up, anyone can run the play kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that was another thing.
And that's like a little bit of an over exaggeration, but
our O-line the other day was looking really good.
Yeah, and you have to keep in mind that's an O-line that's missing Andrews. So you're missing your main guy, and they filled in well. I think they did a great job in the run game, and one big concept that Tony the Guru Romo was talking about out there in the booth was we were running a lot of HB toss plays, and a lot of what's called, I believe, a halfback toss crack, which is where you have your kind of your receivers cut in and kind of block stuff off. Crack the D line is what it's called. And you saw them running it up the gut the first quarter, didn't work. And the second they started running outside, they ran all over Las Vegas. You talked about Sony Michel having some very, very good cuts to get upfield to put up 20, 30 yards. And that's not often what he, you know, is known to do. And, you know, Rex Burkhead, a guy who's just put the head down and keep the legs churning. And he was making cuts and also just doing what he does, putting his head down and getting those extra couple of yards. And I think where the O-line struggled, and it was less evident because of such a run-heavy approach, was the passing game. I think you saw a bit more pressure on Cam than he had against the Seahawks. He wasn't getting that time to find his reads. I don't think it was huge, but I mean, 17 for 28, 162 yards passing, one through the air, one interception. And I apologize for that because I started him in fantasy. So Grandy's going to have a bad week. That's just how it goes. I'm sure Ed loves that because I was playing him in fantasy. But 10 of those completions were to backs. One of the fullback, I think two to Sony Michel, seven to Rex Burkhead. So he's just getting dump offs. He's getting dump offs and he just didn't have that time to let plays develop. But you talk about that. That's a great way to counter your O-line collapsing on you and getting pressure to the quarterback. They're all going to rush the quarterback. You throw a screen play and no one's there. So it's just Bill Belichick knowing how to out-coach literally Chucky on the other side, who got fined some exuberant amount of money for not wearing a mask in week 2.
Did he get fined again?
No, not this week, but week 2, okay, I think he was one of the coaches that got hit pretty big. But I didn't even leave you guys with a question or anything to talk about.
Well, can I touch on the Cam Newton thing for a second?
Yeah, go for it.
Whereas last week was kind of very encouraging, what we wanted to see, a lot of passing, a good game. Again, an interception last week, but that was a pretty good defensive effort by Seattle throughout most of the game. This week, this interception...
By an alleged criminal, I will add in there.
Okay. Alleged, of course. Alleged. But this interception and kind of this passing game in general, not as encouraging for me. A couple of slip-ups. I can't remember correctly, probably should have been more than one interception, if I'm
there
right.
There were definitely a couple of close plays, and the interception he threw was just, it wasn't even like it was just a bad decision. It was a bad decision that you wouldn't
expect. He basically threw it right to the defensive player.
To me.
Yeah, that being said, you get like a pass. We won the game. It's not like we're going to be blaming him. I know probably next we're going to get into our defense, which was very active in the game. But just kind of an off game for Cam in his first off game as a Patriot, and that coming in week three in a game that we still won pretty handily is pretty all right by me.
Yeah. And I was going to say, too, you saw a lot less designed run with Cam this week. I think he still had a decent number of attempts. I think it was 9.
Was it still? I thought he only ran 4 or 5 times. He had a big one toward the third quarter, was it?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Rushing, Cam Newton had 9 attempts for 27 yards, but a lot less. It more seemed like it was out of necessity than it was. Mm-hmm. You know, pocket's falling apart. He's just going to take off, whereas Brady's a guy who's going to stand in there and take a sack. But a lot less of him just getting the ball and knowing he's going to run immediately. We never saw that goal line formation. We saw 19 times in week 2.
Which again, we talked about and kind of predicted that.
We talked about at length. But I think one thing I want to bring up. You mentioned the defense, and we'll get back to that. The Patriots must have an informant listening to this show. Because I said take out Darren Waller. I don't think he had a target in the first half. And the guy ended with 4 targets, 2 receptions, and 9 yards.
That's our boy, Steven Belichick, frequent contributor to the line. I'm just kidding.
I mean, that's
I don't know if that guy knows what the internet is.
He takes out your best option.
Dude, instead of watching movies as a kid, Belichick had him watching game film every week. This is what you're going to do, son.
You think he had that much emotion in his voice? This is what you're going to do, son. We are on to the next one.
Take this cutoff hoodie.
He treats his dog better than his kids.
Okay, all right.
All right. Yeah, but Darren Waller didn't do anything. Once again, on my fantasy team this week, I'll take the hit. I'll take the hit for a win, guys. I'll say it. Ed, I will gift you the win this week.
Yeah, dropped like 140.
But we'll go back to the defense, who, I mean, 20 points is kind of weird because you think about how well the defense played. It doesn't kind of add up. One kind of slip up towards the end of the second quarter. Raiders getting the ball back with something like 30 or 45 seconds on the clock. First play, downfield, they take a shot. Stephon Gilmore, I believe, got called for a pass interference, which is very uncharacteristic of a player of his caliber. And
it was one of those ones it was one of those ones where it didn't really look like he was going to be able to make a play. And if the guy caught it, he was for sure getting the touchdown. So I think it's more of a, I'll take the penalty in lieu of for sure giving up 7 points, although you gave it up anyway. So it doesn't look great, but you are correct. An uncharacteristic slip up by the Patriots defense at the end of the second quarter.
He's had a couple of those already this season, which is probably my biggest concern, honestly, on the defensive side of the ball right now, outside of losing Hightower and all our other pieces. Basically half our defense is kind of Gilmore's play. More of the amount of flags he's drawn so far. Not good flags. That has been a little concerning to me over the last 3 games. And the DK letting DK run over him was not the most fun thing to watch, but also I think Metcalf is kind of a star in the making right now. Like his athletic ability is just on another level. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say too, you have to keep in mind that because he's so good, we are also matching him up against literally the best talent in the league. So it's easy for a guy like our second man, like, you know, JC Jackson to have a good game when he's covering the second or third guy in command. Stephon Gilmore, almost every snap, you know, in Miami, he's against Devontae Parker. In Seattle, he's against DK Metcalf, who basically isn't a human. In week 3, he's against Darren Waller, who's arguably one of the most dynamic tight ends in the league right now. So he is playing against the best talent. But to be fair, he was doing that last year in one defensive player of the year. So it definitely is a little uncharacteristic of him and concerning. But I think it's, you look at this in the first 3 weeks, and this is what I call the Belichick preseason, in a season that had no preseason too. four or five games with a week six bye. I say give them five games to figure everything out. They're gonna take time. Big test coming up next week against Kansas City, but we'll kind of save that stuff for a future episode. If you guys have any kind of last closing thoughts on the Pats?
I just want to mention, I don't think we actually said the stats, 3 fumble recoveries for the defense, 1 for a touchdown in the end zone. Did they have an interception?
No, they should have had a couple.
There was one
that Stephon Gilmore had a breakup that he might have come up with, and I think it was Jason McCourty just basically dropped one.
Yeah, so again, the 20 points kind of speaks a different story, but overall a very good. Granted, I don't think the first fumble by Carr, I don't think was technically a fumble. I think we kind of got away with
whoever
one there.
Had the first fumble. It was they got the ball. I think it was Jacobs got the ball back and just.
Yeah, but again, a good showing by the defense nonetheless. I think the 20 points is kind of not reflective of that.
Ed, anything else to add you want to throw in here at the end?
No real closing remarks. I really liked what Cam Newton said. I think it was last week in one of his press conferences. And basically just how he doesn't care about getting paid right now and that he just wants to win football games. I really like that mentality. I thought it was nice to see, especially in a league right now that everybody is wanting to get paid. All the stars want to get paid, especially after Patty Mahomes making $500 million.
Those sounds ridiculous to say.
Yeah. And everybody wants to get paid. And I just thought it was a very Patriot-esque comment. And it just also goes to show how far or show how he really fits into Belichick's and the Patriot system. I know a lot of people are talking about clashing personalities, but I honestly think Cam is a really great fit for us, especially so far as we've seen. Just bringing kind of a team mentality. I mean, you see him on the sidelines talking, having fun with everybody, defense and offense, doesn't matter.
The clip of him sliding off the bench this week that basically took social media by storm.
And you're hearing all these things. I think it was, who said it? Someone had a comment today about how on the entire plane ride, he was just studying the entire playbook. And
I think it was Matthew Slater that made that comment.
Was it Slater? Okay. That's who I thought it was. And or saying stuff like how it doesn't matter when if practice is 5 a.m., 6 a.m., he's always the first one there, always already there, ready to go, doing something, just trying to get better. And I just think he really fits in with the Patriot system in that way of just kind of putting your head down and just trying to win football games no matter what, at any cost, even if it means losing the fun aspect. But I think also Cam brings that fun aspect, as I was talking about on the sidelines. A little more than Tom Brady, I might say, but yeah.
Allegedly.
Anyways, sorry. What were you going to say?
No, I just think he's a good fit.
I think that's going to do it for the Patriots. And then this episode that has gone on for, I'm assuming a pretty long time, but it's been a great conversation.
An hour here.
So anyways, we'll talk more about the Patriots Kansas City matchup. And I just, the one thing I just looked up, I want to leave you with. So Patrick Mahomes on average in a day, given his contract, makes $137,808 per day, which is over twice what the average American makes in a year, just based on GDP per capita.
A man could pay my tuition in literally a day.
He could pay all of our tuitions in a day.
Hey, Patrick Mahomes, if you're listening, I don't think you sound that fans. Much like Kermit, okay?
Anyways, there's a lot of things to be said, but we'll save them for the next episode. That is going to do it for this episode. So if you guys did enjoy listening to it, make sure to leave a rating, leave a comment, leave some sort of something so we know how we did. If you want to follow us on Instagram, Brady Bros Boston, YouTube, Brady Bros Twitter, yours, Nicholas, is Brady Bros Nick. Mine is James_B_Boston. I probably could have said a lot more things last night after the Celtics, but I was just sad, so I didn't. And also just, yeah, feel free to reach out, let us know. Thank you so much, Ed, for being on the podcast. It was
thank you.
Incredible conversation, and definitely something we'll look to do more in the future. Just having people on, I think it spices it up, other than Nicholas, you and I just sharing the same opinion on everything and talking pretty about much. It for an hour. So thank you once again for coming on, and I'll let you guys have whatever closing remarks you want.
Just thank you guys for having me back. Always love coming on. Always great just to talk Boston sports for an hour or two, or however long we go on for. Thank you guys. It's been great.
Well said. I think very refreshing to have a different voice in the podcast, and something we will definitely do in the future. I think that pretty much does it for this episode, guys. Thank you so much for listening. See ya.